An hour or so later, Preacher arrived back at the Paiute village with a pale and frightened Joseph Spivey. He pushed the hotel clerk into the lodge where Smoke and Matt were staying. They had rekindled the fire in the center of the lodge, since it looked like they wouldn't be getting much sleep the rest of the night. As soon as Spivey saw Matt and the flickering light from the flames, his eyes got wider and more panic-stricken.
Please, Mr. Jensen, don't kill me. I had to lie at the trial. I just had to. He threatened to do terrible things if I didn't.
Matt lifted a hand to stop him.
Take it easy, Spivey. I know Longacre and Tally forced you to lie about what happened. What we want you to do is tell the truth to the authorities.
What authorities? Sheriff Sanger's too afraid of Longacre and Tally to do anything against them.
As soon as we take care of another little chore, we're going to head to Carson City, Spivey, and you're coming with us. If we can reach the governor, he can start getting to the bottom of this mess.
I don't know. Tally will kill me if I talk.
Preacher leaned closer to the clerk.
Who do you think is more loco, son? Tally or me? You better think real hard about your answer.
Spivey lifted his hands and ran his fingers through his lank, tangled hair.
Oh, God. Maybe if I told the captain of that cavalry troop, he could have the soldiers protect me from Longacre's men.
What cavalry troop?
They rode in late this afternoon. I don't know how many soldiers. A lot, though. 100 or more.
Smoke, Matt, and Preacher glanced at each other.
You reckon Longacre got his partners in the ring to have those troopers sent in?
I'd say that's pretty likely. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if the ring's influence stretches all the way to the War Department.
Dadgummit, you mean we gotta fight soldiers too, and not just Longacre's gunnies?
Maybe not. The Indian Ring may be responsible for sending those troops here, but that doesn't mean their commanding officer is taking orders from Longacre's friends. If we can get to him and talk to him when Longacre's not around, we might be able to convince him we're telling the truth.
I can still do a lot of things, but sneaking into an army camp carrying off the fella in charge probably ain't one of them. When I was younger, maybe.
You won't be able to get to Captain McKee, now that I think about it. When I was eating supper in the hotel dining room before I went home, I heard rumors that the cavalry is riding out here in the morning to move these savages off this land.
Blasted! This just keeps getting worse. Longacre's got us blocked at every turn, especially as long as he has Maureen and her uncle as hostages.
Oh, now wait a dad blame minute. I ain't even heard about that part of it.
Smoke and Matt filled them in on what they'd learned from the man who delivered Longacre's message.
There's only one way to ride up to that cave where Maureen and her uncle are being held. If all three of us, along with Longacre's man, don't show up there tomorrow morning, prisoners will be killed.
But you ain't gonna let that happen. You got some plan, Smoke. I know you do.
Maybe. But from the sound of it, the cavalry's liable to attack Walking Hawk's people about the same time we're trying to rescue Maureen and Mr. Ferguson.
We can't be in two places at the same time.
Well, we'll see about that.
As the sun rose the next morning, four men rode along Big Bear Wash where it twisted into the hills. Smoke and Matt flanked Longacre's gunman, whose name turned out to be Grady Malone. The fourth figure, who brought up the rear, rode the rangy gray stallion called Horse and wore buckskins. His eagle feather plumed, broad brimmed felt hat was pulled down to shield his features. The face under that hat was the coppery, hawk like visage of one of Walking Hawk's warriors, a man named Pine Tree. He was dressed just like Preacher, and he rode Preacher's horse. Smoke and Matt hoped that from a distance it would convince Longacre's hired killers that the old mountain man rode with him. Actually, Preacher was back at the Paiute village. It was his job to keep Spivey safe, stall the cavalry, and prevent a battle from starting before Matt and Smoke could rescue Maureen and Ferguson and return with them to the village.
Oh, is that all you want me to do? Well, why didn't you just ask me if I can flap my dang arms, fly to the moon, too?
If anybody can do it, I figured it'd be you, Preacher.
Now, Smoke glanced over at Malone, who held the reins fairly naturally. Anybody watching him wouldn't be able to tell the gunman's feet were tied together under the horse's belly. The pistol in Malone's holster was an old, rusty cap-and-ball revolver that hadn't worked for years. One of the old men had taken it off a dead soldier after a Paiute skirmish with the army 2 decades earlier. Malone's gun, a well-cared-for Colt 44, rode tucked behind Matt's belt, since his holster lay somewhere in Sanger's office back in Halltown.
Use your head. Just might come out of this alive.
Malone's face wore a bleak look.
I don't think so. Once the three of you are dead, Tally will kill me for taking you to the hideout.
You were supposed to bring us here anyway. What's the difference if you told us?
You wouldn't know about the riflemen hidden on both sides of the gap that leads to the cave?
You'd think we wouldn't have guessed as soon as we saw the layout. This isn't the first trap we've ridden into on purpose.
Yeah, well, Tally will kill me anyway, just out of sheer meanness. I just know it.
You may be right. After all, Tally cut that poor girl's throat without a second thought, didn't he?
Malone's eyes flicked toward Matt, but he quickly looked down again.
I don't know nothing about that.
Smoke nodded toward the hills ahead of him.
That's the gap you were talking about.
Malone lifted his head to check the terrain.
Yeah, that's it. The cave's in the base of the ridge just past it on the left.
Smoke studied the rugged landscape they were approaching. 2 ridges angled toward each other to form a rough V with a small opening at the base where they didn't quite come together. The gap was about 12 feet wide and 50 feet long, with steep sides that rose maybe 30 feet before dropping back a little and then climbing still higher. The setbacks on both sides of the gap sat littered with boulders and smaller rocks, providing cover for the riflemen who were hidden there, 3 on each side, according to Malone. They were supposed to let Malone and the others ride into the gap, then open fire when Malone suddenly spurred ahead. Smoke glanced up. Longacre's men would be watching their intended victims approach, not looking above them. At least, that's what Smoke and Matt were counting on. They were only a couple 100 yards from the gap. The sun was up, flooding the landscape with reddish gold light. It was going to be a beautiful day for those who survived the next few minutes.
For God's sake, why didn't you just ride away after you stopped the hanging in Helltown? You were free and clear of all this. Why didn't you just keep going instead of staying and fight Longacre?
Because somebody's got to stop folks like him who think they can just take anything because they want it.
But he's bringing in the railroad. That's a good thing.
Not if he tramples on people's rights to do it.
You're loco, all of you. You can't fight somebody who's got all the money and power Longacre has. Not for very long, anyway. He'll crush you.
Smoke ignored the gunman's ranting.
Here's the gap. Don't even think about calling out a warning, Malone. You'll die before you finish.
Smoke and Matt looked calm, but they felt tension gripping as they waited for the ball to start. They didn't have to wait long. The shots weren't aimed at them, though, and they didn't come from the boulders where Longacre's men were hidden. The bullets rained down from higher on the ridges, where some of Walking Hawk's warriors had scaled those almost perpendicular slopes during the night, and slowly, silently, worked their way into position to ambush the ambush. Smoke dug his heels into the Palouse's flanks and sent the horse lunging forward.
Let's go!
Their only hope of saving Maureen and Ferguson was to take their captors by surprise and reach the cave before the gunmen could kill the prisoners. Smoke spotted one of Longacre's bushwhackers who stepped out from behind the boulder where he'd been hidden. He sprayed lead toward the top of the ridge as fast as he could work his Winchester's lever. One of the Paiutes was hit and toppled off his perch, clutching his belly where the bullet had ripped into him. He plummeted into the gap below. Smoke lifted his Colt and snapped a shot at the man who had just killed the Indian. The bushwhacker spun around and dropped his rifle as the slug from Smoke's gun punched into him. He plunged off the ledge. Smoke, Matt, and Pine Tree galloped past both bodies. Smoke was sorry one of Walking Hawk's warriors had been killed. but unless they were lucky, he wouldn't be the only Paiute to die that day. Longacre's gunman Malone whirled his mount and fled as soon as the shooting started. Smoke hated to let him go, but there hadn't been any other choice. If he had tied a lead rope to Malone's horse, Longacre's bushwhackers would have noticed it and might have realized sooner that something was not going according to plan. As they stormed out of the gap, Smoke caught sight of the cave up ahead. It was under the huge slab of rock that formed the ridge on the left, about 100 feet away. Several of Longacre's men came running out when the shooting began. Their job seemed to be finishing off any survivors who made it through the ambush in the gap. Those men could see the ambush had not gone as planned. Smoke drew his second gun and guided the Palouse with his knees as he opened fire with both Colts. Matt's gun and Pine Tree's rifle also blended with the thunder of galloping hoofbeats. Longacre's hired killers crumpled under the deadly hail of lead. Matt flew from his saddle and ran to Maureen and Ferguson.
Are you all right?
Matt dropped to his knees next to him. Ferguson had an ugly, scabbed-over gash on his forehead. A souvenir of the pistol whipping he suffered when Judd Talley kidnapped him from the hotel. But Maureen appeared to be unharmed.
Uncle Colin's hurt, but I'm fine.
That little scratch is nothing to worry about. My head's too hard for a gun barrel to do much damage to it.
Matt tried to untie him, but Smoke appeared and used his knife to cut their bonds.
Pine Tree's making sure, but it looks like all of Longacre's men are dead.
Pine Tree?
One of Walking Hawk's warriors. He pretended to be Preacher.
The old mountain man.
We'll explain the whole thing later. Right now, we need to get back to the Paiute village. The cavalry's on their way out there this morning, and things could get bad.
They headed for Walking Hawk's village, but before they rode very far, Matt pointed to their left.
Look over there.
Smoke had already spotted the odd, dark shape on the ground a couple hundred yards away. Although he didn't like the idea of delaying their return to the Paiute village, he wanted to see what it was.
Let's check it out.
As they rode closer, Smoke realized it wasn't one shape, but two. A horse and a man pinned underneath.
Oh my God! Help me! Somebody help me!
Smoke swung down from his saddle. The trapped man was Grady Malone. The fallen horse rolled its fear-crazed eyes at Smoke and tried to get up, but one of its front legs was badly broken. Smoke hunkered on his heels next to Malone and stroked the horse's quivering flank. The horse's head dropped back to the ground as it settled down.
You look like you're in a bad fix, Malone.
You stupid horse. Stepped in a damn prairie dog hole. Fell on me. I couldn't jump clear because my feet were tied.
That's a shame. Anybody who signs on to work for a man like Longacre has to figure out he might come to a bad end. From the looks of it, you're pretty busted up inside.
Blasted horse. Wallet all over me. I couldn't get away. Get it off me, Jensen. My leg's broke, I know, but if you just get this horse off me...
Bloody foam bubbled from Malone's mouth. When Smoke saw that, he knew at least one broken rib had pierced the lung. Malone was drowning in his own blood. From the curiously flattened look of his midsection, that wasn't all the damage the horse had done to him. Smoke was a little surprised the man had lasted so long.
Moving the horse isn't going to do you any good. You're dying, amigo. There's nothing we can do.
Damn Longacre. Damn Tally. But I knew it was going to be like this someday. Or worse. Like you said, Jensen, a man who lives by the gun will catch up with you someday, too.
More than likely.
Smoke debated what to do next. Before they rode off, he'd put a bullet in the horse's head to end its misery. Maybe he ought to do the same for Malone.
You're gonna be too late. The soldiers are gonna wipe out those dirty Paiutes.
Smoke frowned and leaned closer.
How do you know? Captain might listen to reason when Preacher talks to him.
Longacre's not gonna leave it to chance. Tally and some of the other boys, they're gonna bushwhack the troopers, so they'll think the Redskins did it. Even if the cavalry loses the battle today, nobody can stop the war. They'll just send more soldiers until all the Paiutes are dead.
Smoke felt a chill go through him at the end of his words. He knew the gunman was right. If Longacre and Tally could provoke a fight between the army and the Paiutes, nobody would listen to reason. One way or another, the killing would continue until Walking Hawk and his people were wiped out. And just like that, Cyrus Longacre would win. Smoke stood up and drew his gun. The animal's suffering was over. As Smoke turned away, he slid a fresh cartridge into the cylinder to replace the one he had just fired. He looked to his companions.
Come on, it's no time to waste.
Jensen!
Smoke swung up into the saddle.
Jensen, don't ride up! You can't! Jensen! 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 Don't leave me, Jensen! Jensen!
Smoke didn't look back. It was the first set of new buckskins Preacher had in a while. Felt pretty good, too. The round-faced, middle-aged woman who brought the clothes to him beamed. Preacher wasn't too old for a bit of flirting, and he smiled back at the Paiute woman. That put him in mind of Helena Markova. He wouldn't mind seeing her again, even though it was highly doubtful that would ever happen. Any woman who handled a shooting iron like that Russian gal was worth spending some time with. He was sitting on an Indian pony next to Walking Hawk, a short distance back from the edge of the northwestern bank of Big Bear Wash, where the main trail from Halltown crossed it. Off to the left was a long, low ridge in which the wash cut a chasm. The morning sun painted the sandstone of the ridge blood red. Preacher hoped that wasn't an omen. More than 50 Paiute warriors accompanied him and Walking Hawk. Some of the men had been left back at the village to guard it, and they were guarding Joseph Spivey as well. Walking Hawk made sure they understood how important it was to keep the pale-faced hotel clerk alive. The chief wanted the confrontation with the cavalry to take place away from the village, away from the women and children. Preacher would handle the talking if it came down to it. The old mountain man still hoped that Smoke and Matt would get back from their little chore in time for the parley. But from the looks of the dust rising into the air on the other side of the wash, that wasn't gonna happen.
You and your men stay here, Chief. I'll talk to them soldier boys.
I will come too. I will be beside you, Ghost Killer.
Suit yourself.
Walking Hawk signaled to his warriors. Then he and Preacher moved their horses up to the very edge of the wash. Preacher could see the soldiers at the base of that dust cloud. They came on at a steady trot. The troopers were about 50 yards from the wash when their captain held up his hand and the sergeant responded.
Company! Halt!
The soldiers brought their mounts to a stop, formed in a fairly regular line facing the Indians on the other side of the wash. Leaving the non-com with the men, the captain rode forward alone. The officer was not lacking for courage. Though the captain was doing Cyrus Longacre's dirty work for him, he might not realize it. Preacher hoped he could talk some sense into the man. Preacher held up a hand in greeting.
Howdy!
You're a white man.
That's right! They call me Preacher.
The old mountain man waited a second to see if the officer recognized his name. The man didn't give any sign of it if he did.
I'm a friend to the Paiutes, and I come here today to speak for them.
Well, there's no need for any discussion. I'm Captain Edward McKee, and my orders are to remove those hostiles from their current habitation and accompany them to a more suitable location pending a review of the terms of the treaty they've violated.
No offense, Captain, but somebody done told you wrong. Walking Hawk and his people ain't hostiles, and they ain't done anything to violate the treaty.
No? Then what would you call rustling cattle and attacking railroad surveyors? Mr. Preacher, was it?
They ain't done those things. It's the other way around. They're the ones who've been attacked by Cyrus Longacre's hired guns.
Mr. Longacre is a well-respected businessman. You open yourself up to trouble when you start making baseless accusations against him, sir.
They ain't baseless and I got proof.
Oh, what sort of proof?
Back at the Paiute village, there's a fellow who can tell you just what a no-good skunk Longacre is. If you'll just come with me, Captain, you can talk to him and hear the truth for yourself.
You want me to come with you to the Paiute village?
For a second, Preacher began to hope that he was getting through to McKee. He nodded.
Yep, that's right.
Where I can be taken prisoner and used as a hostage? I don't think so.
Oh, now, blasted Captain, Look, you don't know it, but you're being used by that varmint Longacre.
That's enough. Are those savages going to comply with my orders? Or do I have to force them to comply?
Walking Hawk and some of the other Paiutes understood enough English to know what the captain was saying. Preacher sensed a stirring in the ranks of warriors behind him. The troopers on the other side of the wash looked just as nervous and angry. The tension, the sense of impending violence was so thick in the air, Preacher could practically smell it. All it would take to set off a frenzy of killing would be a single shot from either side. Smoke, Matt, and Pine Tree held the discussion as they and the others galloped toward Big Bear Wash. Matt turned to Pine Tree.
Where could Tally and his men hide to ambush the cavalry? The area where the trail crosses the wash is pretty open.
My people call it Bloody Ridge, for how it looks in the early morning sun.
You've been around here more than I have, Matt. You remember this place?
Yeah, now that Pine Tree mentions it, I do. It's a couple hundred yards from the spot where Preacher's supposed to stall the troopers. That's within rifle range for a good marksman.
It doesn't matter how good they are. If Tally and his men open fire when the Paiutes and the cavalry are facing each other across the wash, the sound of the shots is all it'll take. Somebody on one side or the other will panic and start shooting too.
Then how are we going to prevent that even if we get there in time? If we open up on Tally and the rest of those gun wolves, then our shots will cause the same result, won't they?
Kylan Ferguson and Maureen were riding behind the three men. Ferguson moved his horse up alongside Smoke's Palouse.
Let me ride ahead and warn the soldiers. Oh, I couldn't tell them what's going on.
One of us could do that.
As far as those troops are concerned, we're fugitives from the law, Matt. The officer in charge of them would be more likely to believe Mr. Ferguson.
He turned to Ferguson.
That's a good idea. Can you get there on your own while we circle around and come up on the ridge from behind?
Of course. I've done a bit of exploring in the countryside hereabouts. I won't get lost, I assure you.
I'll go with him. The soldiers will listen to me, too.
We can hope. Just be careful. If you run into any of Longacre's men, they'll probably try to stop you, even if they don't know exactly what's going on.
Don't worry about us. Just get there in time to stop Tally from ambushing those soldiers.
He and Maureen veered off from the others. Smoke and Matt led the way toward a low line of red along the horizon. Pine Tree pointed toward it.
Bloody Ridge!
Several hundred yards from the ridge, the men left their horses with the Paiutes, then hustled along on foot.
When we get there, try to keep anybody from getting a shot off.
Smoke drew his knife from its sheath, and the others followed his example. Battle was going to be at close range. Smoke spotted a couple of men holding half a dozen horses each. He pointed them out to Matt. The two of them stole forward while Pine Tree and the other Paiutes hung back for a moment. Smoke waved the Paiutes forward as Matt calmed the horses. Quite a bit of blood had been spilled. They didn't like the smell of it. The men crept up the slope as quickly and quietly as possible. The skittish horses might bolt at any moment, and if they did, the hoofbeats would warn the men on top of the ridge that something was wrong. As Matt neared the crest, he heard Judd Tally.
Remember, shoot into the troopers, not the Redskins. They won't think about where the bullets are coming from. They'll just open fire on the Paiutes.
Matt reached the top and saw Tally and a dozen of Longacre's hired killers crouched behind rocks, aiming rifles at the cavalrymen down below. Tally heard Matt lunge toward him. Matt thrust the knife ahead of him, intending to sink the blade into Tally's chest, but Tally used the rifle he held to ward off the blow. The Winchester's barrel cracked painfully across Matt's wrist and sent the knife spinning away as he crashed into Tally. The two of them bounced off the boulder Tally had been using for cover. Matt's momentum drove Tally back, and suddenly the ground fell out from under him. Both men tumbled down the steep slope of Bloody Ridge. Smoke, pine tree, and the Paiute fell on the rest of the gunmen, striking so fast the men didn't have a chance to fire. A couple died instantly as knives plunged into their bodies or slashed across their throats, but the others put up a desperate fight. As the silent battle unfolded on the ridge, the standoff below continued, with the soldiers and warriors facing each other across Big Bear Wash, having no idea what was going on, knowing only that they were ready to kill their enemies. Sudden drumming of hoofbeats in the distance shattered the tense silence and made Preacher lift his head in surprise. Across the wash, the sergeant turned to look, then turned back to McKee.
"God is coming, Captain!"
McKee wheeled his mount around.
"More savages, Sergeant?"
"I don't think so. They look like white folks to me."
Preacher realized that was true. As the pair of riders galloped closer, it was impossible to miss the long red hair streaming out behind one of them.
"Captain McKee, that looks like Maureen Ferguson and her uncle from Halltown. And you just better listen to what they have to say."
"Don't presume to give me orders."
McKee turned to Haney.
"Sergeant, escort those civilians to me. The rest of you, hold your fire unless I command you to shoot."
"Well, that's progress. He's at least curious enough to want to know what's going on. I hope the Fergusons can explain."
The ranks of troopers parted to let the sergeant through as he rode out to meet Maureen and Ferguson. Preacher could see both newcomers well enough to be sure that's who they were. The sergeant brought them to the edge of the wash on the soldier's side. Their horses were lathered and exhausted from a hard run, and the two riders looked pretty worn out as well. Ferguson had dried blood on his forehead from some sort of injury.
"Captain, you're in command of these troops."
"That's right. I'm Captain Edward McKee, and I'll ask the questions here, sir. Who are you and what are you doing here?"
"Colin Ferguson's my name. I own one of the hotels and the general store in Halltown. This is my niece, Maureen. We're here to stop you from making a terrible mistake, Captain. It's Cyrus Longacre who's to blame for all the trouble here, not Walking Hawk and his people."
"Not another crazy story about Mr. Longacre. I'm surprised a successful businessman would believe such a thing."
"Would you believe that Longacre sent his hired killers out here to ambush you and your men so you'd start a war with the Paiutes?"
"That's insane."
"Is it?"
Maureen pointed.
"Then look up there on Bloody Ridge."
Just as all eyes swung in that direction, two struggling figures appeared at the ridge's crest and plunged over the edge into a wild, out-of-control tumble down the slope. The fact that the ridge wasn't a sheer drop saved Matt's life, but it was steep enough that he couldn't catch himself as he and Tally slammed into and bounced off rocks. They didn't come to a stop until they reached the bottom, some 40 feet below where they'd fallen. Matt had lost his gun on the way down, and so had Tally. They were on even terms now, other than the fact that Tally was several inches taller and probably 40 pounds heavier. Both of them, shaken up by the fall, struggled to their feet about the same time. Tally shook his head like a bull to clear out the cobwebs. Matt met Tally's charge with a haymaker to the jaw, just as Tally's blow hit Matt square in the chest. The two staggered. Then, they stood toe to toe, slugging it out. Tally dealt out as much punishment as he absorbed. Matt found himself forced to give ground. Tally was too big, too strong, and maddeningly fast. If he had any weak spots, Matt had not found them. He blocked one of Tally's punches, but he couldn't get out of the way of another. He weaved to the side and took the blow on his shoulder. Matt noted it landed with less force than the punches had earlier. Tally was tired. His face was red and he was struggling to draw breath. He had the size, but not the wind. Matt bore in, cutting and slicing Tally's face with short, sharp blows. Tally's swings became wilder, taking on a sense of desperate flailing. Matt caught him in the throat with a punch. Tally staggered back, grabbing his throat, taking advantage of the opportunity. Matt doubled his fist and swung. The savage punch spun Tally around. He dropped like a redwood, face first, into the mud and gravel to wash.
I'll drive you to perdition. Kill a woman and frame me for it. There's only one place for you.
Matt drove the man's face into the ground like a steam-powered pile driver, pounding his face into a swollen, bloody mess. Tally wasn't fighting back anymore. He couldn't. Somebody grabbed Matt from behind and dragged him off. Matt tried to twist around and strike out at the new enemy.
Matt! It's me, Smoke. It's over, Matt. It's over.
Matt looked around through bleary eyes to see the cavalry captain riding up, along with Colin and Maureen Ferguson. The preacher was with them, too.
That's enough!
Smoke let go of Matt.
More than enough, Captain.
Smoke pointed at Tally's senseless form.
You must have seen this man with Longacre in Halltown. He's Judd Tally, the boss of the hired guns who work for Longacre. He and a dozen of Longacre's men were up on that ridge, ready to ambush you and start an Indian war, so Longacre could get rid of the Paiutes.
That's insane.
You're right. Longacre's so arrogant, I reckon you could call him loco. He'd rather spill a lot of innocent blood to get what he wants, all to make a point that no one dares stand up to him.
I don't believe that.
Longacre had a young woman killed, just to frame me for her murder. That's how crazy he is, Captain.
And we can prove it. All you gotta do is talk to the witness Longacre and Tally forced to lie at the boy's trial.
The officer looked around at all of them and shook his head.
This is all too confusing. We're going back to Halltown, all of us, and I'm going to get some answers, by God.
You mean your troops, too?
The captain hesitated for a second, but then he nodded.
Yes, I'm not going to be responsible for starting an Indian war if someone's lied to me.
Well, that's for a sensible thing you've said.
Smoke nodded toward Tally.
You better take him and any of Longacre's men who are still alive back to town with you. Preacher, you fetch Spivey and meet us there.
The old mountain man nodded and wheeled his horse.
And just who are you to be giving orders here?
Name Smoke Jensen. If you want to get in touch with Washington and ask about me, go right ahead. I've done a few favors for the War Department in my time.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to get this all sorted out. And if you and your friends have been lying to me, Jensen, you'll pay the price. I'll see to that.
Smoke, Matt, the Fergusons, and Captain McKee rode ahead of the main body of soldiers as they approached Halltown. Several troopers accompanied them to act as guards over Tally and the three hired killers who survived the battle on Bloody Ridge. Quite a commotion erupted in the settlement as the group rode in. Cyrus Longacre heard the shouts and stepped onto the porch of the Sierra House, backed by the rest of his gunmen. His jaw tightened when he saw the bloody, battered, semi-conscious form of Judd Tally surrounded by cavalrymen. Longacre's eyes glittered with hate as he looked at Matt. Matt saw that look as he reined to a halt in front of the hotel along with the others. He smiled grimly at Longacre. The railroad man appeared to recover his wits.
Well, Captain McKee, I see that you've captured a couple fugitives.
That man...
Longacre leveled a finger at Matt.
...is a murderer. He killed an innocent young woman, brutally slaughtered her. He was supposed to hang yesterday. I suppose we can still have a hanging today, though, huh?
The cavalryman straightened in his saddle.
There's not going to be any hanging.
Oh? Well, Matt Jensen was found guilty in a court of law and legally sentenced to death.
By our judge, you both had paid for her! You'll not get away with it this time, Longacre!
Longacre shook his head and smiled tolerantly.
Really, Captain? Well, surely you can see these people are all lying. Why, a reputable witness testified at the trial that he heard the victim scream right after Jensen went up to her room.
Smoke looked back along the street.
What witness would that be, Longacre?
He jerked a thumb over his shoulder.
That one?
Longacre turned his head, and his nostrils flared as he saw Preacher and Joseph Spivey sitting their horses amongst the cavalry.
There he is! There's Spivey!
Matt saw Roscoe Goldsmith in the crowd forming in front of the hotel. He called the lawyer over, bent down in the saddle, and spoke a few quick words to him. Goldsmith seemed a little more sober than usual. He nodded to Matt, then stepped toward McKee and raised a hand.
Captain, a word?
Who are you?
Roscoe Goldsmith, attorney at law representing Mr. Matt Jensen. If I might be allowed to ask a few questions.
This isn't a court of law, blast it! Although I'm severely tempted to place this town under martial law. Where's the sheriff?
Matt saw Walt Sanger come up to the edge of the crowd. But when McKee asked that, the lawman turned his back and quickly scurried away, ducking out of sight down an alley. Matt suspected they would not see hide nor hair of Sanger again until it was all over. Goldsmith ignored McKee's question and turned toward Judd Talley as Preacher and Spivey rode up to the hotel.
Mr. Talley! Mr. Talley!
The big gunman slowly lifted his head, blinked his eyes several times, tried to lick his swollen, battered lips, and looked around. Goldsmith pointed at Spivey.
The clerk has just testified that he saw you go up to Virginia Berry's room a short time before Mr. Jensen ever reached the hotel. He heard Miss Berry scream while you were up there, Mr. Talley, before Mr. Jensen even arrived. What do you have to say to that?
Oh, that's a lie.
But he says he heard it.
He couldn't have. She never made a sound. She never even saw it coming. Oh.
Talley stopped short as he realized what he had just done from the porch of the hotel. An obviously desperate Longacre grabbed for straws.
My God, Judd, you mean that you...
You told me to! It was all your idea! You hanged too, you...
Smoke watched the wheels turn in Longacre's head. The sergeant and the rest of the soldiers hadn't reached the settlement yet. If Longacre's men could kill Smoke, Matt, Preacher, and Captain McKee along with Spivey, Longacre could take over again. With his hired guns running things, the citizens would be too afraid to tell anybody the truth about what had happened in Helltown. On the porch, Longacre took a quick step back and yanked a pistol from under his coat. Judd Talley's head rocked back as the slug smashed between his eyes, killing him. Now Talley would never testify in court that Longacre had ordered him to kill Virginia Berry. Longacre waved to his men and ducked into the hotel.
Kill them all!
Longacre's other men clawed at their guns, following orders to the last. Both of Smoke's Colts were already in his hands, and Matt held the .44 he had recovered at Bloody Ridge. Preacher whipped out his Remingtons with blinding speed. Bullets pounded into Longacre's men, ripped through their bodies, smashed windows in the hotel behind them. The Longacre crew got a few shots off, mostly into the planks of the boardwalk at their feet, as powder smoke rolled and guns sang a song of death. Anybody who had been in the lobby when the shooting started lit a shuck. Matt ran up the stairs, taking them two and three at a time. As he reached the second floor landing, he spotted Longacre emerging from the suite at the end of the hall. He had a valise in his left hand, and he still gripped the pistol he had used to kill Tally in his right. He snapped the gun up and fired. Matt felt the heat of the bullet as it sizzled past his ear. The .44 in his hand sang again. The railroad man reeled back, dropping the valise. It came open, spilling cash across the floor. Longacre's gun sagged, but he lifted it again. Matt fired a second shot that punched into Longacre's chest and knocked him back through the doorway. Matt approached cautiously. He could see Longacre lying in the sitting room, not moving. When he reached the doorway, he saw that the pistol had fallen on the floor. He kicked the gun away and stood over Longacre, who stared up at him through pain-racked eyes. Blood from the wounds in his chest turned his expensive shirt front to sodden crimson. Longacre's eyes glazed over in death. It was just about the same spot he found Virginia's body.
Matt?
Smoke approached from behind him.
Matt, are you all right?
Matt lowered the .44 to his side and turned away from Longacre's body.
Yeah. It's over.
Captain Edward McKee looked Smoke Jensen square in the eyes.
You can rest assured I'll make a full report of what happened here and who was really to blame. But if everything you told me is true, Mr. Jensen, I can't promise you what will happen to that report. Things that uncomfortable or embarrassing for certain parties tend to get lost in Washington.
Unfortunately, I understand. But the truth can only be hidden for so long. Eventually, people figure out how to recognize a varmint for who he really is.
I hope you're right.
McKee put his hat on and held out his hand.
Good luck to you, Mr. Jensen.
He smiled faintly as he and Smoke shook.
Having seen you and your friends in action, I don't suppose you really need that much luck. Just plenty of ammunition.
McKee stepped off the porch of the Ferguson Hotel and swung into the saddle.
Move him out, Sergeant Haney!
Column! Ho!
Now what's gonna happen to that railroad line now, you reckon?
Somebody else will take over and finish building it. Longacre's heirs, whoever they are, will probably sell the whole shooting match to the Southern Pacific.
You know, I was thinking I might hang around here for a while. Me and that lawyer fella, we've been talking about how we want to make sure Walking Hawk and his people get a square deal when the railroad comes on through. Which is bound to happen sooner or later.
Bound to, as long as it's done the right way next time.
We'll see to that.
Smoke turned to Matt.
How about you?
I haven't decided what I'm going to do next.
Well, now, I reckon some of that'll be up to the red-headed gal who's coming across the street.
Maureen Ferguson and her uncle strode toward him. Colin Ferguson had his cane again, and the local doctor had cleaned and bandaged the cut on his forehead. As they stepped onto the porch, Ferguson wagged a finger.
I was hoping you'd still be here, Matt. We have something for you.
What's that?
Maureen held out her hand. A sheriff's badge lay in her palm.
We found that in Walt Sanger's office, but there's no sign of Walt. It appears he resigned his position and moved on to greener pastures, leaving Halltown in need of a sheriff.
You want me to take over a sheriff?
Maureen beamed.
The whole town does. As soon as you rode in, Helltown started becoming Halltown again.
Well, I appreciate the offer, but
Matt looked over at Smoke and Preacher.
Don't look at us. You gotta make up your own mind, boy.
Preacher's right.
Well, maybe for a little while. I'm not taking the job permanent like, though. Just until you can find somebody better suited to it.
Matt gave Smoke and Preacher a hard stare.
And I could sure use a couple deputies while I'm at it.
Preacher's already said he's staying here for a while. Not me, though. I'm headed for Colorado as soon as that Palouse of mine rests up a bit. I've got a ranch to get back to. And a pretty wife.
I can understand why a man would want to get back to his wife.
Maureen looked at Matt. It was was all smoke to do not to laugh when he saw the flicker of panic in the younger man's eyes. Matt was gonna have his hands full keeping the peace in Halltown, among other things. Though Smoke would be headed back to Sugarloaf as soon as he could, he knew he'd be seeing Matt and Preacher again. The Indian Ring still lived, powerful, still up to no good. The way he, Matt, and Preacher got around, sooner or later they were bound to run up against some other scheme hatched by that crooked bunch. When that day came, whoever found trouble would put out the call. The others would come a-running. Family would always answer the call.
The Family Jensen Helltown Massacre is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Graybill, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, David Coyne, Tracy Lynn Oliveira, Terrence Aselford, Joel David Santner, Ken Jackson, Alyssa Wilmoth, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Smith, Tim Getman, Drew Kopis, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Tim Pabone, Thomas Keegan, and Johann Detweiler. Additional Boot Hill Boys performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Colleen Delaney. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Allison Thomas and Brian Rogers. Graphic audio sound design by Allison Thomas and Dwayne Beeman. Original music composed by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. If you enjoyed The Family Jensen Helltown Massacre, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, and Matt Jensen The Last Mountain Man series, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
What kind of sheriff are you anyway?
Where will it stop? Who will stop the crime wave? Is our bank next? Will our citizens lie dead in the streets? Fire him!
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Some got blown. I got a whiff of powder or something.
I'll get Sanders. You stay here and stay armed. Don't know what's in the building or the bushes.
Having the right man wearing the star is important to a business like mine. I sell good times, Sheriff. There's lawmen that just don't like anyone having a good time in their towns, and then well, there's trouble.
Arrest the whole lot! Arrest Ralston! We can't have this! Doubtful's reputation is ruined!
For what?
For public indecency.
I don't know any law like that, Mr. Mayor.
Then invent one! I want them out of my town by morning!
Arrest them for lewd behavior. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back. You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia.
I hear you want to marry me. So, let's talk.
Name your deal.
I'll marry you for 1 month.
I don't think I could swing that.
What do you think I am? I don't believe in free love.
You're expensive, all right.
Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Available now in graphic audio.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down.
Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.